Welcome to the Fozcast, and for our 100th episode, we wanted to treat you to a banger of an episode. So we went and got England and Leicester defender Connor Cody, and we spoke about the England player that surprised him the most when he got his first call-up, the effect of that horrific Raul Jimenez head injury and playing in those hostile Merseyside derbies, and a heck of a lot more. Honestly, this episode is a banger. Connor, welcome to the Fozcast, mate. Honestly, we're really, really happy you could be here, and we appreciate the effort as well. Yeah. We're going to start in the current day, okay? The new team, Leicester City, but you're injured. Talk me through the injury, what you've actually got and how it occurred.
Yeah, mate, gutted, absolutely gutted. I'll be honest, I've never been injured in my career. So
hold on, you're 30 years old?
Yeah.
And you've never been injured?
No.
Never, as in you've never missed a game?
No, so I missed a game for a few years ago. My missus got COVID in the COVID era, no crowds, all that sort of stuff. And I missed the game because I was a contact of a con, all that sort of caper.
Close contact, yeah.
But do you know what that was? I'll tell you. I was lucky I was on a run for Wolves at the time, and I got to about 122 consecutive games, and the record was like 123, 124, something like that. And then missus got done with COVID, and I was away with England at the time, and I had to leave the England camp. So I had to leave England, go and stay in the apartment on my own in Wolves, and then I missed the Southampton game, so it done the record. So yeah, that was the only game I missed of in my career. So yeah, come to Leicester in the summer, it was brilliant, loved the start, loved pre-season, feeling strong. And then literally I was just in training one day and I felt a bit, I was running, and as I've gone to turn to run backwards to receive a ball, my foot's kind of cracked, and I thought, a bit mad, just like because your ankles click and crack and all that sort of stuff. So that's kind of clicked, and I thought no. So I played the next day and the pain was excruciating. So I got through an hour, to be fair. Luckily I got through an hour and the gaffer just went, nah, enough now, come on, off you come. And then,
so we could obviously see that you're limping. So you basically just played an hour of football with a broken foot, right?
yeah, but I was just desperate because he was playing us 70 anyway in that game. So we, you know, pre-season is like, yeah, where you build you up and you play different amounts, 45, 60, whatever it is. And he wanted to play us 70 anyway. So I just wanted to get through the 70 and then kind of, let's just see what it's like. Because I just thought I had a stiff foot. I'll be honest, I was saying to the physio, come on, first half, give me anti-inflam. And I went, I've got a bit of a stiff foot, I don't know what's up, can you just give it a little bit of a move? So he's pulling on me foot. He's pulling on me foot on that board. Yeah, I got through it, and I was gutted the next day, because we were going to Thailand the next day as well. And I had the scan in the morning, doctor pulled me in when I got to football with my suitcases ready to go. And I knew what was coming, he just went, let's see.
So what's that like then, when you've just signed for a new club?
Yeah.
Signing for a new club is always a big deal. I think people don't understand really, because you're going to a changing rooms, and you might know two or three of them, but you're still going into a building where you're meeting 30, 40, 50 brand new people, right?
Yeah.
It's daunting, isn't it? Yeah,
100%.
And then on day one, well, day whatever it is, you get a broken bone and you're out of the squad. Do you feel a little bit sort of, what's the word? Like you've let them down a little bit?
Do you know what? It's funny you said that. As soon as I'd done it, that was exactly what I said to my dad and my missus and my mum and different things. And that was the biggest thing. Like, you've also been injured, mate, playing and different things. And when you've been at a club for a while and you've participated and you've been a big part of it, or you've shown what you can do, it's maybe not as bad. You're gutted getting injured, of course you are, no matter what. But I've gone there and kind of, the club have wanted to sign me. I couldn't wait to get there. I was loving pre-season. I was loving what the gaffer was doing. I love what the gaffer's doing because he's fantastic. I'm sure we'll get onto it. So the fact that I got injured when I did, it was exactly that. Just the feeling of letting people down, letting supporters down.
Because supporters
then saying to me, like, can't wait to see you play. And I'm thinking to myself, don't know I'm injured yet. And it's such a tough one. It's such a tough one. And that was the biggest thing for me, just letting people down, mate.
So did you miss the trip? Did you miss the Thailand trip?
Yeah, so I missed Thailand trip, And they're quite well known, the Thailand trips, in terms of obviously the owners from Thailand, things, and they really look after the boys, and what you go out and do there is fantastic. So I was absolutely gutted, more for just going spending time with the lads. You know, when you're new to a club and you just want to kind of get off on the front foot and have that time to spend and get to know them.
Relationships are built, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like when like with our business, you know, we go and have a, not suggesting you go
down on the pub.
But you know, just going
out
to
Lux and Vivian
That's how relationships are made, isn't it? Going on tour.
Yeah.
Ultimately.
That's so Leamington, by the way, the Fox and Vivian, isn't it?
mate, if you want a steak, place, top notch.
Yeah, but no, I was desperate to go, to be fair. So when the doc pulled me in and kind of told me, I was devilled. I was absolutely devilled. Because then I stayed, I mentioned before about the training ground's got an accommodation. So the first week I was injured, I made sure I stayed there all week just to kind of get a, I wanted to kind of get a head start on my injury type thing, just to be there all the time, do everything I needed to do, be in all day. I had everything there for me, food, everything was right. So I was literally at the training ground on my own. There was no one else there. Me and a security
guard. What are you doing? Just
the whole time. Just trying to.
Just chilling.
Just doing my work right. So it was me, the physio, and the physio went home. It was literally me and the security guard all night. So I go down, game ready.
Oh, I go down and do things.
Do you know what I mean? Just like kind of, just on me, just to try and get a little bit of heads up. Cause I'm so desperate to get back and be part of it with the lads. Do you know what I mean?
Well, even, yeah, I suppose, do you know what? That's just incredible professionalism as well, though, because footballers travel, like, even if you're traveling half an hour in the car, just even that half an hour journey in the car, do you know what I mean? That being in that set position stiffens you up a little bit, doesn't it? But whereas if you can just go straight up to your bedroom and chill, and it's a bit selfish at times, isn't it? Yeah. You have to be a bit selfish, though, especially when you sign for a new club and you do that, that's top, mate, honestly.
Yeah,
that's absolutely
it's something that I try to do, but like I said, just to try and give me a push going into the season, really. Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about Leicester then. You mentioned your manager there, Enzo Maresca. Talk to me about him as a guy, him as his footballing style. And apparently he's opened your eyes a little bit, right?
Oh, without a doubt. I think in terms of him coming in, we kind of knew he was coming in because we knew he'd worked with Pep Guardiola at City last year. He was his assistant. And so we knew kind of coming in, wonder if he'd bring in Pep Guardiola's ideas, wonder if they'll play like similar to City. And then we're all like getting a little bit excited, different things. So he's coming in literally day one. It was kind of, we build up in a 3-2, fullback comes inside.
You were in on day one, by the way.
I signed before the start of pre-season. That was something I wanted quite quickly, just so we'd be in. So day one, he comes in and straight away we're working in. Back four, but as soon as we get the ball, fullbacks come inside, 3-2, and we're building up like that. And it's literally all about having the ball. And then he speaks about, obviously, his time with Manchester City. This is how we do things, this is how we want to play. And listen, his ideas and what he wants to do, we were speaking before, weren't we, off camera, mate, is about kind of our way of growing up. We've got the keeper now joining in about four and different thing. And it's such a new way of football. Yeah. And I think how football's going, because what Man City are doing at the minute is extraordinary. Yeah. I think it's absolutely amazing. So to see what the manager's bringing into our club as well is fantastic. And we're loving every minute of it. Yeah.
So when you say the keeper's coming into a back four, you literally mean in possession, the keeper will come into the back four.
Yeah, so it depends on kind of how the other team are pressing and different things. So if another team comes and presses in a two or a three or different things like that, and we can make an overload with the keeper coming into the back four, he's more than happy to come and step in. And then, like, there's been times where in pre-season when I was training, I'm on the left of a back four or right of a back four, and I look to my right and imagine Fozzie jumping in there, and you go, what's happening here? Do you know what I mean? No one's in goal. And he's demanding the ball. They're asking for the ball. They want the ball to go and play. And it's brilliant. It's brilliant. It's something kind of I've never fully experienced. I've watched a lot of football. I watch a lot of football all the time, and I'm a little bit football obsessed, really. So to see now being actually involved in a manager who wants to do that and do it well is
how
fantastic.
How the keeper's been with this?
He's brilliant. Obviously, the lads who were there before really bought into it as well. I think the way the manager wants to play is how we all want to play. We all want to have the ball. When you play football, you want to have the ball majority of the game, and all teams play different ways. I get it, and there's all different ways to win. But the way the lads are bought into it, and then obviously he's brought Mads in as well from, I think it was Bromby, he's a Danish keeper, and what he's like with the ball at his feet is extraordinary as well, to be fair.
It's honestly, you're absolutely filling me with fear here. Honestly, this sounds like my worst nightmare. Honestly, if a manager or a coach said to me, I want you to step into that defensive line, right, and you just be one of them, just play balls into me, I'm thinking, come on.
What you're saying is you'll take Pulis every day.
A Pulis ball all day. Right, even Rosette. They can't score from Rosette.
You say that, and when it happens, see, I was always the same, mate. Leading into, I've never had this way of playing where it was all about the ball. It was more, maybe at Wolves, we were a counter-attacking team a little bit in the 3-4-3, 3-5-2, whatever it may be. And this manager now comes in and just completely opens your eyes to, no, we control the game with the ball. We have the ball. Football's about having the ball. We have the ball. So your keeper joins in, you step in, you play through the lines, you play second line to set back. And we're talking about all this language, and I'm going, yeah, I'm having a bit of this.
So how does this affect the way you play then? Does this mean you have to look at it slightly differently and play a different game to the way that you might have done before?
Yeah, I think a little bit. But I think also that the club have signed me to kind of, they know what I can do in terms of how I play football or whatever. Listen, I play football the way I do. But I think you've always got to be able to adapt. And I think that's something that every footballer will have to do. So I've always had to adapt no matter where I've been. But kind of adapting to how he wants it to be done is fantastic. And we're learning new things every day. I think that's the biggest thing. When a new manager comes in and you can learn new things every day, it's such a bonus and it's such a thing to take your thought forward, I think.
Oh, I love it.
That's amazing. One question I've got to ask you, and now you might have evaded this one, an important one, initiation song.
So it would have been in Thailand. So the lads are on me a little bit, I'll be honest. The lads are on me now, but I'm still injured. So I think it's coming.
So you've not done it yet?
I've not done it yet, no, but I know what I'm going with. I'm walking in Memphis every day of the week. Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah, every day of the week.
Confident
as
well with it?
I don't mind. I'll have a go of it,
And then
Yeah, I'll have a go of it.
Do you know what it'll be? It'll be that first away trip. Yeah. So normally it'll be the first away trip and it will be dinner time. But what they do is dickheads. They're absolute dickheads. So they'll start the murmurings, like even when you're on the coach on the way, they're, whoa, we got initiation song tonight, lads. It's obviously full. And everyone's looking at him going, oh yeah, who is it tonight, lads? Oh yeah, it's Connor's initiation tonight. And then we're at dinner and it's like you're waiting for the little ting 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 on the glass.
That's
and
it. Every club that makes it. Oh, it's the worst feeling in the world. And you know what? You build yourself up to it as well, don't you? Like the build up to it is worse than the actual singing, I think. Oh, build up's horrendous.
Rank, mate.
Horrendous.
Honestly, I've done it before and I can't taste my food, mate. Yeah. I'm not even thinking about my food. Yeah, I don't care. Yeah. Just get through it, all right? Get through it. Right, I want to take it back then, Connor, okay? I want to take it back to Liverpool days, making your Premier League debut.
Yeah.
So you came on in the 89th minute for somebody called Philippe Coutinho in a 3-1 win versus Fulham. Brendan Rodgers brought you on. What do you remember from that day?
Very little, if I'm being honest. It was quite a blur. It was something where, listen, I grew up through Liverpool and I think it's quite well known. I was a Liverpool fan growing up and it was something that was something I always dreamed to do. That was something I always wanted to do. And to kind of, actually, I always remember the player liaison coming on after the game. This is something I do remember. I was doing the runs. Come on, 89, but you still do the runs after the game. You know what it's like. And I'm doing the runs after the game and he came on to me and he went, no one will ever take that away from you. And that kind of stuck with me, that, because...
Yeah, nice.
That's something that will never be taken away from me. And that was something I worked so hard for. I think Studdy scored a hat-trick on the day. The one thing I do remember from the game is Studdy scored his third goal. And you might find the clip somewhere, I don't know. And Callaghan was doing the dance with him.
No.
Jamie Callaghan. Oh, it was the stiffest dance ever. Doing the dance with him on the pitch. Yeah, doing the dance with him. So that's something I remember. In terms of me coming on, I hardly touched the ball. I might touch the ball two or three times. But it was something that, like I said, I'd worked so hard to do it. And like the player liaison said at the time, no one could ever take it away from me.
That. What were you, 21, 22?
Yeah, would have been. Yeah, I think it would have been about two. I went on loan to Sheffield when I was 20, 21.
Yeah.
So I think it was just before then. So yeah, around about that age, yeah, something like that.
So with Ben, sorry, just quickly, with obviously being coming through the system, being a Liverpool fan, Ben, when you were a kid, you were a Spurs fan. You've said in the past, Ben, like that playing football, it kind of takes away almost like being that fan, and especially going to Everton last year. Are you still a Liverpool fan, or does that dilute?
No, and I think Fozzie's right. I think it's something where when you play football, and I really do believe this, and especially for someone like me, kind of when you come up against a team you support, it's so hard to then support that team when you're desperate to beat them. Desperate. Like when I went to Everton last year, I got so much stick. Honestly, people and Evertonians giving me loads of stick. Kind of, I think they were probably wondering kind of how I was going to react. I would never have gone to Everton if I didn't really want to go to Everton. I was so desperate to go to Everton when I got the opportunity because of the size of the club, what they were telling me at the time, and being part of that club. So I think when I properly started playing football professionally, it completely goes because you're so desperate to beat them. When we ever went to Anfield, whenever Liverpool ever come to Molineux or Goodison or whatever it was, I was so desperate to beat them that fan side completely leaves you. So in terms of being a fan, it was so hard to do. And I don't think supporters necessarily understand that sometimes because I get so much stick even now from Liverpool fans. Everton fans at the start, they're fantastic with me now as well, to be fair. But that was what it was like. It kind of disappears, yeah.
It's good though. You want that surely because when you're fully invested in Everton then, aren't you? So like you wouldn't want a player going, oh, he's a Liverpool fan and he's playing for Everton because that would then... You're getting pelters from every direction.
Oh, without a doubt. And I think it's also the fact of you would never go there if you still had kind of... I would never have gone to Everton if I had any kind of feelings for Liverpool.
Yeah, exactly.
That would never... I had so many years away from Liverpool and so many years playing against Liverpool where I was desperate to win. Now, I wouldn't be desperate to win if I still kind of had a little bit of a soft spot there. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So when I got the opportunity to go to Everton and I got a bit of stick, I was thinking to myself, surely people know that I would never have come here if I weren't going to give absolutely everything and I'd run through that wall there for... winning with this football club, and that was kind of how it becomes, and that was what I become like.
I think as well, people probably they don't unless you've done it, you don't know how many nerves are attached to playing Premier League football week in, week out, especially when you're playing the big games and stuff. You're so consumed with trying to make sure you do everything right professionally and get it done properly. The last thing you want to spend any energy thinking of is, oh my God, I supported these as a kid. I used to watch him playing when I was a kid. That's the last thing. You've got no time to think about that, have you?
Yeah.
What was it like when you scored that goal? Talk to me about that feeling. I know it was disallowed and it was like, oh, come on.
Because you went for it, didn't you?
You must have thought about it in your head a little bit, surely.
Oh, I did. Oh, 100% I did. The night before, I was thinking about kind of, you know, that week. So, little story that week. Frank was obviously in charge and fantastic. Yeah. I love Frank in terms of what he was like, how he was as a person, how he wanted to coach us. I thought he was absolutely outstanding, I'll be honest. So, that week, he brought in Tony Bellew. So obviously Tony Blair's massive blue, huge, a bigger blue as you can imagine. So we're all in the meeting room, and it was like a talking show where there's two chairs set up, and the lad who does the Everton TV was like asking him questions. So big Tony Bellew rocks in, size of the door, massive, comes in and just starts telling us how big it is to Evertonians, what it means to Evertonians, how long we haven't beat Liverpool for at Goodison, and all these different things. And I thought it was brilliant. I'll be honest, I absolutely loved it. I love kind of looking from it at it from a different perspective. I think it had been brilliant for the boys who were in the room to listen to an actual proper supporter who loved Everton, bled Everton, everything about it. So we had that in the week leading into the game. And the night before, of course, I thought about it. And then when the ball actually come in, when I put the ball in the net, I turned to look at the line, the flag was down. So I thought, oh my God, all that was going through my head was I've won the derby for Everton. I've won it. Because I think it was quite left, 70 minutes, whatever. Yeah. So all I had in my head was I've won the derby. Oh my God, I've won the derby for Everton. This is unbelievable. So going for it, just because of what it would bring Evertonians. I said, I fully invest in, no matter where I'm playing, similar to any footballer that we know, mates, it's in terms of you fully invest in that football club at that time to give the best that you've got for that football club. And I was no different. So to see it get chalked off was absolutely gutting to me.
That was one of the questions I was going to ask. Me and Ben were going to ask about the Merseyside derby and do the local lads instill what it means to the club. But obviously with Frank, that's fantastic that Frank... He's not from the city, but he's then understanding he's
British,
it, bringing in Tony.
Yeah, I won't get it anyway.
And what I will say is, you know what was so good about Everton? Do you know Seamus Coleman? What a man he is. Honestly, I can't speak more highly of a person when it comes to a football club as Seamus Coleman with Everton. Honestly, he's been there so long, he understands kind of Everton. He's been there during really high times, really good times, and obviously the lowest of low times, kind of last few years where we've been struggling. And he's been kind of what he means to that club and what the club means to him. You see it every day. He lives and breathes it. The meetings he used to have with the boys, just him on his own, kind of towards the end of last season, were just...
What, him basically? Yeah,
just pulling the lads. Just saying, listen, how much it means to people. You don't realise, he lives in the city. He's similar to kind of me when I was there. And everybody who sees him at traffic lights, in the shops or whatever, he goes out in a cap and it's just trying to... Because he's thinking, we're struggling here. I don't really want to see people. Do you know what I mean? Because he feels a bit embarrassed and different things. But he was pulling people, saying, you don't know what it means to people, what's going on now. We're struggling big time. It's killing people. And the conversations he was having with the lads were unbelievable.
It's the kind of stuff people need to see and hear more about. Honestly, I honestly think a lot of football fans think footballers just want to come in, get the money and then go home. And it's not that way, is it? There are so many people in football clubs up and down the country that genuinely care and they pull in the right directions. And sometimes they get bad reps in the press and whatever and this and that. But unless you're in that club and inside it, you just don't get to see it, do you?
No, 100%. And people like him, and by the way, I can speak about most footballers I really do believe I can speak about most footballers. There's so many like that. And you feel it when you go there because you fully invest. It's like when we were speaking about Leicester before, kind of, I felt like I've let people down by getting injured.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That's what you do as soon as you go there, because there's so much kind of, football's so big these days, mate, isn't it? It's massive. It's everybody's sport. And you just don't want that feeling of letting people down. And we said, when we was at Everton all season, especially the second half of the season, don't be part of this team if this giant of a club goes down, because the people remember it forever. You'll be part of this team. And luckily we wasn't, and we stayed up on whatever. But that was what we were speaking about during the season.
Oh, mate. Okay, let's take it back to Liverpool then. I want to talk about some of them boys that you were playing in that, even in that team that you made your debut in. These are the big boys, by the way. These are the big boys, right?
The biggest of the big boys.
The biggest of the big boys. I played against a few of these myself, and some of them are just horrible. So I've got the likes of Luis Suarez, we've got Stevie G, we've got Jordan Henderson, Jamie Carragher, Coutinho. Go on, give me a few bits and bobs about some of them lads.
Well, where'd you start with them? Listen, first and foremost, incredible footballers. You know yourself playing against them. Absolutely incredible footballers. But you've seen more in training with them. So it was kind of training with them every day where obviously you learn the most. I was lucky enough to train with them every day. And it was something where the things they used to do in training were just mesmerising sometimes. Especially when I was a kid. Do you know what I mean? When you're a kid and you're kind of coming up and you're thinking, obviously you can play football, but when you go to that level, it's just a different level, isn't it? Completely. And what they used to do, and Steven Gerrard, for example, he never used to lose a tackle, ever. And that was one of the biggest things that kind of, you know, sometimes in training and you'll kind of come out with tackle, you don't want to get injured or you don't want to injure the other player.
Yeah.
Every tackle will
smashing
be flying, whether you're 18, whether you were 35, he would be smashing through. And if you never smash the next person on your team, he'd be on you. Like the levels and kind of the standards that they set for each other was unbelievable. And you wonder why kind of they're all successful. Yeah. But that's a massive reason why. Just incredible footballers. Yeah.
Quickly, can I start one of the Stevie J actually? Yeah. But I remember when I was with the England squad, right? Do you remember you do like a six-a-side and stuff and you have like floaters around the edge of the pitch? Yeah. At the side of the goal, you'll always have a float, like basically the side men. They're the team that have just come off, basically. He was at the side of the pitch there on that side of the goal and there was somebody else on that side. Somebody played him a ball into his feet, right? And bearing in mind, he's off the pitch, he's behind the line. He saw me try to anticipate that he was going to pass it to somebody like 6 yards. So he knew that I was like cheating, basically. Yeah, he knew I was. So he spun it into the goal.
Yeah.
And I remember him spinning it into the goal. And I looked at him and I thought, you prick. And then I thought, and he gave me a smile as if like, don't cheat then.
Don't do it again.
You'd never do that in a game. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. If somebody can score, they're going to score. Yeah. I remember thinking that's just next level because he had half a second to think to do that. Yeah. But he did it.
It's a little lesson, isn't it?
It's a joke, mate.
How quick have you got to think for that as well? How quick has your mind got to work to know that? Do you know, because I think seeing it now, he would have been thinking about that before. He'd have been thinking,
I've seen him cheating before.
He's coming out there, so I'm gonna stitch him up here. I'm gonna put him in the net.
It's so good.
Do you know
though?
What I mean? Like, it's unbelievable, kind of the feeling.
But if you can learn little bits from people like that, 100%. Like that's the level we're talking though. But the pace of stuff that he used to do stuff at, the level and the intensity and the pace of his brain was always just a step ahead.
Yeah, like, I remember Peter Crouch saying on one of his podcasts, and he was saying that just the ferocity in which he'd pass the ball, like wrap it into his feet.
He took pride in that.
Yeah. And he'd be like, it was almost a test. He was like, how's your first touch kind of thing. But he was just relentless, wasn't he?
Yeah. Do you know when people say a ping? You know when you hear a ping?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He was him and Scholes were in it with the beautiful ping. Do you know what I mean? Like, they used to slap balls into you. If you couldn't control it, you could always control it because the but if you couldn't or you made it, he was on you.
Yeah.
And that was the biggest thing for me. Like, the standards that he set every day was just so good to see. And whether it be kind of before training and getting treatment in the gym, doing things before training, making sure they were ready for training, always out at training. It was so big that for me, kind of going into like my football career as like a young lad was so big to see. I thought it was brilliant. Yeah.
Give me some on Luis Suarez because I love Luis Suarez.
Got to talk about Luis Suarez.
He is the original rat.
But what a player.
Oh my gosh.
Again, do you know what I've just said there about like kind of always training, like little things like that. So obviously, I was a young lad, so when the lads would play, you know, you do first day recovery, second day recoveries, you're probably on fifth day recoveries now, aren't you?
Just constant recovery, mate.
Just constant, and play again.
Just before we started, I said something about, oh, he's 40 now, and Connor was like, he's how old? Oh, he's 40?
I think I'll keep saying it, all right?
So we were all young, we never played. So we'd always have, a day after the game, we were training, and it'd be quite an hard session, do you know what I mean? So young lads and then the lads who didn't play. So we train. He would train recovery days every day.
Proper.
Every day. And I mean proper, mate. And he would fly. So he's training every day because you never used to get many days off because Liverpool would be in Europa League, Champions League, whatever it is. And he would train every single day. It was the level that he used to train at was absolutely unbelievable.
He'd have physios. He'd have all those guys pulling their hair out then. They would be pulling their hair
massively
out,
because he would go in and they'd say to him, you're on recovery, and he'd go, no, I'm on the grass. And he would literally be on the grass with 18, 19-year-olds running the show. Day after a game. So we played the night before. We always give Big John, Big John, the Norwich games. Yeah. Remember the Norwich games?
Oh, it's horrible.
We're talking John Ruddy,
Big John Ruddy.
Everyone was a hat trick.
Yeah.
Halfway line, hat
yeah,
trick.
Yeah, halfway line, volleys, flicking over Ryan Bennett's head, and I was mates with Benno at Wolves. So we used to give him stick all the time for what he used to do. But he would do that and then train with us the next day, the kids. Like the level that he used to set himself and set us as kids, to be honest with you, as young lads, was just incredible. It was incredible.
He used to scare me a bit on the pitch, he did, because I knew he wouldn't, if it was a 50-50 ball, he wants to hurt you. And it sounds bad, right? It does, it sounds bad. But it's every single footballer should probably be like this, shouldn't
they? Yeah.
If you can hurt the opposition, right, you're hurting the opposition. It's just the way it goes. And he was that guy, like you wouldn't believe. I used to see him pinching and scratching. Yeah. Rubbing his like studs down players' backs and calves and stuff, and I thought, oh, you're horrible, but I want you on my team.
Do you know the other one who's as close to him as I've seen now since I've been to Leicester is Vard.
Really?
Vard. Not in terms of horrible like that, not in terms of horrible like that, but never wants to lose a tackle as a striker. You know, sometimes strikers are a bit fancy, aren't they? Do you know what I mean? I'm not speaking out of turn there, I don't think, but not many strikers like that side of the game. Suarez loved it, Vard loves it. Loves it. If there's a tackle here and it's a 70-30 for the keeper, he's going in.
Knocked you out, didn't he?
He's flying in.
No, we sort of knocked each other out, actually. He actually went off injured. Like, he went off a concussion.
Oh, really?
Like,
did he?
I probably should have done as well, to be honest with you. But I did my chin.
I hope he didn't contact your chin with his head, did he?
No, he did, yeah. That's what I mean. Yeah,
is that what it was? Yeah.
Playing the
he's
fire,
going
right?
off.
It's a big old chin, this.
He's in hospital.
Yeah, so he came off after about an hour. I was all right, to be fair, but I cut my chin open there. But yeah, he was. He weren't. He weren't weren't letting go of it, right? You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm winning the ball for sure, but he's still
street sticking footballers, aren't he? Do you know what I'm saying? The street footballers, aren't he? 100%. Do you know what I mean? The street footballers, aren't he? I seen that. Vardy's 37 now. Do you know what I mean? And I don't mean to kind of out him now, but he's 37 and he's still the same.
You couldn't tell though, could you?
He's still the same, mate. Still the same. And it's brilliant to see for kind of us, kind of what he's bringing to us this season. But yeah, he's exactly the same.
Okay, I've got one more player as well then. Goalkeeper Pepe Reina.
Yeah.
Talk to me about Pepe Reina. I love this guy, by the way. I've got a shirt up there.
I've seen it when I come in. And what a guy. And even when he went back to Villa and kind of straight away he come over and give you a big hug. And I was a kid at the time. I was thinking, you won't remember me. Straight away he comes over. What a guy. And kind of, I think he was not one of the first ones, but how good was he with his feet?
He was one of the first ones.
Do you know, in terms of with his feet and a sidey.
Yeah.
When we're talking about
the
side volley.
Come on.
His side volley
was
like
volley
next
in
level.
The history of football.
You said that to Casper as well.
No. This Pepe's was like zinged all the way. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It was like at height, he was beautiful.
Yeah, absolute legend of a guy and kind of, even off the pitch, kind of what he was like with the young lads. He used to put his arm around you and have a chat with you and different things. Yeah. And just what he was like as a guy shone more than how good he was as a player, because he was a phenomenal keeper, weren't he? Let's be honest. That. But kind of just what he was like as a guy was brilliant.
We got a wicked stat about Pepe Reina the other day in one of our quiz questions.
Yeah.
Between 2005 and 2008, he won the Golden Glove 3 consecutive seasons. 57 clean sheets he kept in those 3 seasons. That is unbelievable.
How under the radar does that go, by the way?
I know. That's nearly 20 a season for 3 years in a row.
That goes under the radar massively.
It's so good, isn't it?
Oh, brilliant.
Really good quiz question, that one. Where are we going, Tomasi?
Right, okay. How hard is it to leave your boyhood club with, I guess, fairly limited opportunities? So you went on loan to Sheffield.
Yeah.
And then you signed for Huddersfield.
Yeah.
Was it just a pure football decision, I need to go and play football? Or did you kind of think, I haven't really been given a fair shot here?
I'll be honest with you. I get asked that question quite a lot. Like, how hard was it? Was it hard to leave? And I don't mean this to kind of wind anyone up, but it wasn't hard. It wasn't, because I was so desperate to play football. I'd had such a good year at Sheffield. Like, listen, Sheffield is a fantastic football club, filled with brilliant people. I loved my time there. And really, when I went back to Liverpool in that summer, I was desperate to go back to Sheffield. He was still in League One. I'd had a season in League One. I'd played 50 games. We got to the FA Cup semi-final. It was unbelievable. Sheffield were League One. We were close. We were 2-1 up at half-time against Hull in the FA Cup semi-final. It was incredible.
Yeah, of course it was.
Incredible. Like, it was unbelievable. And I loved my time there. So when loads of people asked me, was it hard? But it was hard. But no, not because I was so desperate to play football. And I knew, and I've always been kind of quite realistic. If you look at my time at Liverpool, the players who were in front of me at the time were going, you mentioned some of them before, Steven Gerrard, Jordan Henderson, Lucas Leiva, Joe Allen. These sorts of players were all in front of me, and I'm thinking, I'm never going to get in here.
This is back in the day, by the way, where he's playing sort of midfield.
Centre
mid, and obviously later on in his career,
I was centre mid, so I'm kind of looking, so I've always been quite realistic in terms of that. So I thought to myself, I want to come and play 23s again, and I've had such a good season. I loved every minute of it. Yeah. Being a professional player, playing for points, knowing what it means, all this sort of stuff. And so it wasn't really a hard decision, because I was desperate to go. I couldn't go back to Sheffield, and Huddersfield came in. And listen, it was the perfect club for me at the time, because again, a club filled with brilliant people. And it's a bit of a mad one, really. When I first went there, they actually said to me, so I signed 3 years there, and they actually said to me, listen, you'll only stay a year. So as a young kid, I'm like,
what? What do you mean?
What, mad? So they were like, no, we'll sell you after a year. I'm telling you. So,
what, they said that?
They said, we'll sell you after a year. We'll sell you. So that, at the time, it was kind of, they were signing kind of younger players to then do that. So I think they signed me for about 200 grand or something, Liverpool, 200, whatever it was, quite low. And then they said, we'll sell you in a year's time. As long as you play all the games, we'll sell you in a year's time. No problem at all. So I was like, right, I played 45 games that year out of 46. And literally, at the start, I never even went back for pre-season. They just ran me and said, oh, by the way, we've accepted a bid from Wolves. I was like,
so fine. You get the big move.
Yeah,
the big move.
This is a big move.
To the best
it
club.
It is, isn't it? Come on.
The best club. The big boys.
Wolves.
Couple of mil.
Yeah, that was it. And listen, when it first come about, I was buzzing. I'll be honest, I was buzzing, because I played there the year before with Huddersfield. We won 3-1, and probably one of the only goals I scored. I scored a banger. Put it past Keams in the top bin for about 30 yards. It was unbelievable. So, yeah, I signed in the summer, and
I need to find this 30.
You need to find it.
Yeah, banger from Conor Cody. I've got to say it, honestly.
So anyway, I signed there, and I couldn't wait to get going. I couldn't wait, just because I'd played there before. I love playing at Molineux. It was something, probably because we've been there and got decent results and different things. I love playing at Molineux and kind of the feeling of it. And as Wolves are a huge club, huge, huge club. And it was something that I really wanted from the start. So I was lucky enough to come in for me. And as soon as I heard the interest, I wanted to get there as soon as,
At what point then did you go from playing in that midfield? What happened? There has to have been something that happened where somebody has said, right, you are not playing in midfield anymore. I want you to drop back into either right back or centre back.
Yeah, so we had a couple of years really where we struggled a little bit at Wolves. When I first went there, I think we finished bottom half of the champ. We were poor. We really struggled. The second year was the same. So Fosun came in the end of my first year. And then they brought in Walter Zenger, if you remember Walter. Then they brought in, so Walter then got sacked. We were having a bit of a tough time. And then they brought in Paul Lambert, who kind of steadied the ship a bit with brilliance. And I got on with all the managers.
Yeah, I've got some questions about managers.
Yeah,
a bit.
Honestly, I got on with all of them. They were brilliant with me. But so then Paul Lambert come in, and then Paul Lambert left at the end of that season, and Nuno came in. Yeah. So at this point under Paul, I was playing right back. And honestly, it was tough. I had a tough time. I had a tough spell there. And I was more of a right back who doesn't go forward. I'm not like a right back we play with now at Leicester.
We asked Ben Milas, what's the difference between left back and centre back? He went, I've got to get forward at
left
back.
You've got to be able to run, basically.
So I was literally like a right-sided centre half all the time. So anyway, playing right back. And then Nuno came in the summer. And you know when a new manager's coming in and kind of you're thinking, the top manager coming in here, I'd love to be a part of what he's doing. I love it here. I enjoy it here. I'd love to be a part of what he's doing. So the first couple of days in training, he was playing three at the back. So we didn't know at the time he was going to go forward three at the back. So I was always the middle of a back three. Yeah. So I'm saying to the lads, I'm being binned here. I'm being binned because we didn't know he was going to go for three at the back at that time. It was a little bit new. Like, no one really played it and different things. So we were like, he's going to go forward the other team. So he's working on the other team. The other team was a four. So anyway, we goes to Austria and I'm on the plane going to Austria. So back then with Wolves, we were on just a normal plane. We're flying out to Austria, you know, the pre-seasons in Austria and different things. Tough, solid, double sessions. Everything's going on. And as we're on the plane going to Austria, I'm sat in the middle seat. So there's a seat next to me spare. You know, the lads are behind me.
Oh, nah.
You know what I mean? So I'm thinking, who's going to be sat there? You know, one of them. Gaffer's walking down the aisle. So the lads are tapping my shoulders, hitting my head, all that.
I'm
thinking, oh, no, he's going to be sat here. Next minute, Connor, I'm sat there. So, oh, God. All right, sounds. So you know, you can hear the lads whispering and that behind. They're all on it, like a bit of banter. And honestly, I go back to that conversation all the time. What he done for Wolves? He'd done everything for Wolves, what he told me on that 2-hour journey there. Honest to God, mate, it was unbelievable. And he said there, like, he'd watched every one of our games from the previous two seasons. He'd watched me, he'd watched the team. It's his club now. He's going to go forward of playing three at the back. And then I'm thinking, right, I played middle of the back three the whole time. There's no one else played there. There's only been me who's played there. So if you're going, right, okay. And this is how we're going to go forward. This is where I see you. This is how we're going to do it. So I was like, right. And it was mind-blowing, really, because I'd never really had that before. And he came in and basically scripted the whole thing and saying, I'm going to do this, 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 and this, and we're going to fly, and we're going to do this. So I was like, right, that's mad. So we went and played Werder Bremen in Austria, and I played middle of a back three. We won 1-0. Werder Bremen at the time were a good,
decent team.
We were a champ team, just finished 15th, 14th, whatever it was. And we beat them 1-0, and I played in the middle of a back three and loved it.
Completely different style of football.
Completely. We were switching the play, we had runners running in behind, we were compact, we were shut, we were together, we were counter-attacking for fun, I'll be honest, because we were just counter-attacking. It came so natural to us because of how we built us up and how we set us up that we just fell into it. It was brilliant. And then literally from that day, that was it. We just went forward with it. So he never actually come in and said, listen, I see you as my centre-half, I see you as my middle of a back three, you're going to do this, you're going to talk, you're not, nothing. It was just kind of, as we got through pre-season, I kind of understood in my head, this is what's going on here. Because at the start of pre-season, I'm going, I might have to look for something else here because I don't know if I'm going to be involved. Do you know what I mean? That was literally how it worked. And that was what he brought.
Do you think, Connor, that they don't say that because they don't want to kind of, if he had sat on that plane journey with you and said, you're my guy, would the fear be that there's a bit of complacency coming in, or does he want to keep you on your toes? Is that the whole point of that? Because surely, like, I'd look at it and go, surely just tell him what this is, what you're going to do for me exactly.
I also think for the rest of the team as well. I also think for the rest of the team, because if he comes out and says to me, right, listen, you're going to be the middle by back three and you're going to play, well, what about all the other defenders? Yeah. What do they even start? Do you know what I mean? So I also think for the rest of the team, but more so for, like you just said, they're keeping on your toes, wanting to improve, you wanting to make you better, to know that you can't get comfy where you are. If I tell you you're going to play in a back three and you can't get comfy, and none of us ever did. The way he coached us and the way he done things was absolutely brilliant. And I loved my whole time under him and what he brought and how he was as a manager, but as a person as well, how he improved me. Because I probably went through the time where I was growing from kind of a young player to kind of coming into my older years and to 27, 28, different thing. I'm not saying they're old years. I'm not saying that at all. But going from being a young boy to kind of...
More senior member of the squad.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Captain as well?
Yeah, so Danny Bath was captain. What a guy, by the way. Yeah, incredible. Yeah. And I was vice captain to Dan. And I was able to lift the championship with him when we went up. And then Danny left in that summer and I was made captain then in the Premier League. And absolute dream come true. What a moment that was for me to be a captain of a football team, you know, mate. I love the feeling of it, mate. I think it's unbelievable being captain of a team. But to go and captain, obviously, Wolves in the Premier League after being there for a few years was a special feeling, yeah.
You mentioned that championship team a minute ago there. I remember that season so vividly as well. And it was just... Friday night, Wolves would be on the telly, guaranteed. And they would just pop the life out of somebody. Like, I remember, who was it? Never scored one past Scott Carson against Derby.
Oh, the volley.
Do you remember the volley?
The best one I've ever seen in life.
Oh, my God. Yeah. It's pathetic is what it is. He's about 40. Fully 40 yards out, and it has gone in as fast as when it goes in the net is as when it left its foot. It was an absolute rocket, wasn't it?
And that was like it all season, mate. Honestly, that goal was one of the best I've seen live.
It was really
honestly
nice,
one of the best I've seen live. Yeah, because his touch as well. I don't think his touch was great either. He'd probably sit here.
It was to the side of it. It bounced up a bit. It was a bit slow, 100%.
And he just fought it. And I was literally right behind it. Because I never used to go up for set pieces under Nuno, and I was literally right behind. And the way, as soon as it leaves your foot, you go, oh my God, it's in.
I remember him trying to kick it. And do you remember when Kompany scored that goal against Kasper Schmeichel? You've got Aguero and that going, no, no. And I'm thinking there's no way he can generate any power from that ball there and put it in the back of the net. And it was a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
But that team, like I say, Ruben Neves, João Moutinho, Diogo Jota. People forget that he was there. Yeah. And then Jimenez as well. That is like, oh, what a team. Yeah. And then going into that Premier League season, and we spoke about this before we started the podcast as well. Going into that Premier League season, as most teams, you don't really know what to expect from newly promoted teams. Mm. But that very first game of the season, 2-2 draw on telly against Everton. And I remember we were playing, I don't know where it was. It was when I was at Watford. And I remember watching it with all the lads, and we were all going, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. They are like, they're proven Premier League team already by the looks of it. They are good to go.
Yeah, do you know what it was, mate? We all believed. I think for one, we all believed. And I think for two, we never changed. I think I said to you before, kind of, the manager never, ever changed the way he plays. And I think that helped us so much because it gave us kind of so much confidence that we were doing things right.
Yeah, it's black and white then, isn't it?
That we were doing things right, that we knew what we were doing. Everybody, no matter whether you start the game, whether you come on the game, everybody knew the roles. We were a counter-attacking team for me. When we had the ball, we could play, no problem. Yeah. But we were so organised and so compact in terms of what we'd done. A little story about the end of the championship year when we got promoted. Nuno kept me out on a pitch after one of the games, and it was going into the Premier League season. And he kept me out after, so all the lads had gone in, me and him are just on the pitch. So he said to me, so we're on like one of the training pitches. So he said, your line now, where you have your line, Con, on a game day, where's the highest you go? So I stood somewhere on the pitch. So I went, probably about here. He went, you're too high for next season. So I went, got managers these days, you tell you to be as high as you can, to condense the pitch. So I'm thinking, too high. And by the way, I wasn't majorly high because we were in a high-pressing team. So I was like, right, okay. He says, you need to be 10 yards back. So this was literally just as we'd been promoted.
10 yards is a big old difference.
Honestly,
you know?
Honestly, this was literally just as we'd been promoted. So we still had another game to play in the champ. So he said, come back 10 yards. So I'm stood then back looking at the kind of the whole pitch. Yeah. So I must be 15 yards from the halfway line. Do you know what I mean? And loads of teams now don't want to push up to the halfway line as a back four. Mm-hmm. We do it, loads of teams want to do it. So he said, you need to come back. So I'm literally 15 yards from the halfway line. He said, this is it. He said, you imagine Salah running in behind. You imagine Hazard running behind, whoever was there at the time. I can't remember who he said. He said, imagine them running behind. What are you going to do? And then I'm going, yeah, you're right, yeah. He said, don't worry about us pressing. Don't worry. He said, as long as you've got Raul here and you here and everybody in between you, we're fine. Don't worry about it. Man. And literally from that day, after we got promoted, like I said, we still had a game to go in the champ. I thought about it all summer. I was thinking, right, that's what we're going to have us doing. That's no problem at all. And we went into the season doing exactly the same as what we did, just a little bit deeper.
That's amazing. It's incredible. Honestly. Obviously, these are why elite level managers are paid what they are and whatnot. But having that foresight, still in the champ, next season, pulling the player on the pitch is great.
I know for a fact there's managers that would have gone, no, we'll just do the same. We'll keep doing the same. And it's kind of blind. It is. It's just kind of blind because that very first game of the season, they'll go, well, that's where they say, so you're going to have so much space in behind.
I don't know if you remember the Norwich game a few years ago, Norwich Liverpool, first game of the season when they got promoted.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever remember it. You might not remember. This is something that you're saying there.
Oh, I do. I remember it,
the champ.
I remember it because Grant Hanley had a bad game. I remember Jamie Carragher going, oh, he's having a bad time. Yeah, like, this is going to be a long season.
But high press. yeah, to get on course, the front yeah, foot. Yeah. And they went and done it against Liverpool. Yeah. And next minute, I think I'm sure it was 4-0 by about half time.
Sorry, Grant. I'm sorry for dropping you. No, it was a bad one, though.
But that's just kind of what we're talking about there in terms of respecting the league and respecting kind of what's going on. Because the league is incredible, isn't it? Yeah. The league's unbelievable. But yeah.
The thing is, if one of those players does get in behind in the Championship, there's a chance you might get back. You might get back. You might be able to out muscle. You might be able to make the last ditch tackle. If one of the big boys gets in there, you ain't catching them to start with. They are too quick, too fast, too everything, mate. And it's a goal, by the way.
And they're going
to
score, yeah.
Yeah, it's a goal. Yeah. They ain't missing from there. It's a goal. It's as simple as that. The difference is, it's so brutal. It really is. I love it. I love it. Right, so yeah, talk to me about a few of these lads then, all right? Then. Yeah. So, like I said, some of the ones I mentioned there. I want to talk about Diogo Jota, though, all right? Because everybody talks about Neves and Moutinho. Yeah. Just how good was Diogo Jota? Because I think when he signed for Liverpool, he was one of those who actually had a real impact. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and he's one of the ones, kind of, there were so many players come and go at Wolves when I was there, top players, and he was one of the ones where I was really kind of at a point where I thought to myself, we're losing a gem here. We're losing a serious player here. Kind of what he brought us, the power.
His work rate.
Honest
as well.
To God, the power he had in his legs, mate, to run past people, to bully people, to hold people off. You know Nordics?
Yeah.
Mate, I've never seen anybody do a Nordic like him in his life. So have you ever heard of Nordics? Nordics is like this thing where you come down for your hamstrings, and as you come down, basically, I hit the floor.
Hold it, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But he comes down and goes up. Oh, comes down and goes up. Like, I've never seen power in a lad, especially someone as small as him as well. Yeah. And what he'd done for kind of us as a team and playing with him was just incredible. But one of the goals he scored, we beat Man United in the quarterfinal of the FA Cup to get to the semis against you boys. And the goal he scored where he went on a little mazy run, ended up just like Luke Shaw's fantastic, one of my mates, what a fantastic player, but just moved him out the way and slapped it in with his left foot. And we all just went, what a goal.
Yeah, like, Luke Shaw's strong.
Honest to God, like what he brought, and he's one of the ones kind of who I thought at the time, God, we've lost a serious player. But what I will say about him, he's tight as anything.
Really?
Well, he was. Don't know if he is now.
He's on the Liverpool wages now.
He was tight as anything.
If you're tight, you're tight, mate. It doesn't matter if you're earning 10 grand a week or 100 grand a week, mate. You're tight.
Oh,
it's the way it goes.
Tight as anything at our place. Yeah, all the boys will say the same as well.
Nah, man. Diogo, come on. That's shit from
but
you.
Like when he went into Liverpool, because that was in the years where Firmino was really at it.
The front three. It's the front three. The big boy front three as well.
He really dislodged him, didn't he? Because that was a period, remember, in the FPL season where he was.
FPL season,
every week.
Yeah. A threat, Jota. Mate. Massive threat.
Yeah.
And then I want to talk about Jimenez. First of all, the injury. I want to take it back to that day, if that's okay.
Yeah, of course.
Because there's that picture where David Luiz has got his head on his, and you are quite literally just behind him, aren't you? So you get to see it up close and personal. How scary was that?
Oh, mate. One of the worst things I've ever seen in my life, if I'm being honest with you. Yeah, because we set up kind of on corners where he was always front space. I was always front 6 yard, kind of in the zone type of thing. So as the ball came in, we all go up together. And to David Luiz is attacking it, as any defender does. There's no blame on anybody. But as we all go up, the noise of it, mate, honestly, I don't mean to speak like that here, but honestly, the noise of it was horrendous. And kind of as we all come down, he obviously drops. And as we look at him, he was out. And so he's on his side, and as he's on his side, his nose started bleeding. But obviously he's out, and at the time I'm thinking, so we're all waving the doctors on, and you just knew it wasn't great. You knew full well it wasn't great, and we ended up winning that game 2-1, which is mad, really concerning. But the game after it was played at like a pre-season level, honestly, even Arsenal,
just
to be fair,
took it out of everybody,
massively. And like half time, no one spoke about the game. We went in at half time straight away. It was, where's Raul? How's Raul? What's he doing? Where is he? All that sort of thing. Gaffer didn't even speak. We went out for the second half. We won the game, but they were exactly the same. So that injury, what it done for the game, but then what it done to us as a team. Listen, like, he was an incredible player, mate. Incredible, but he is an incredible player.
Yeah,
but what he'd done for us before his injury, he was everything to us. Do you know what I mean? As a team, like what it's like having, you know, it's like having a world class striker in your team.
He's a talisman, wasn't
it? It's incredible. Do you know what I mean? It gives you everything. Like scoring goals is the hardest job in the world. The hardest job in the world. And he'd done it for us on a frequent basis.
He had
done
a bit of
everything
as well.
Everything.
Like, he could get it on his chest. He could hold it up.
Everything, bring people into play. Yeah. He would set our press. So no matter where, so we'd want to force the ball wide, he would always set it.
Yeah.
He would always set that press. So then after losing him, we lost so much in kind of, and I don't think people kind of understood it.
Yeah.
So we ended up finishing that season, I think, 13th, 14th in the Premier League. But he was a huge factor to that because he played every minute of every game.
Yeah, he did,
He trained every day.
Yeah, he worked his tits off as
everything
well,
about what he'd done was everything to us. So to lose him was was heartbreaking for him, more importantly, and his family. But I think what it done to us as a team, I think it's shown as well. Yeah.
Well, thankfully, fully recovered, and he's back doing a bit. You mentioned 100%. A minute ago, I want to talk about the FA Cup semi-final, Wolves v Watford.
You would want to talk about that.
Well,
one,
I didn't play in the game.
I
didn't play in the game, but I did enjoy the game at least. Yeah. Well, I got to enjoy the game. Tell me from your perspective.
One of the worst days I've ever had in football, mate. Really? I've never watched it back. And I think I said to you before, mate, about, I think for 75 minutes, I think it was the most perfect performance. Yeah. I think we were really good. Oh, we played really, really well. Yeah, we scored two brilliant goals. And how we played was brilliant. And then Gerard Deulofeu come on. And it was kind of, like I said to you before as well, about, it was like he had a little bit of a cob on.
Yeah.
When he came on, then he wasn't starting.
He
it was like he had a bit of a cob on. It was like, I'm going to show you.
Yeah.
And when he came on, he just changed the whole game. And whether I should say this or not, but we weren't really ready for it.
Yeah.
It was mad because I think we were in kind of a little bit of cruise control because we're comfortable, we're okay, we're 2-0 up, we'll see the game out, we're all good. Because when we had the lead, we were always quite good as a team because we'd block up and we'd be in our shape and different things. But he just come on and just ran us ragged. And the way he played when he come on was brilliant. And as soon as it went to 2-2, and I think Troy scored the penalty in the last minute, you shouldn't say this, but it was so hard for us to then go and win it an extra time.
Yeah.
It was so hard because you've gone from that high of being 2-0.
Wind out the sails.
Yeah. You know what it's like, mate, in terms of you're cruising at 2-0, everything's fine, and all of a sudden it's bang, bang. You're 2-2, and you've gone from 1 foot in the FA Cup final to now, oh my God, we're on the back foot here, big time. And you were flying. And it was so hard to kind of come back from that. And then we had a bit of a hangover from that. We actually played, thinking back now, we played Southampton the week later and got beat 3-0 away. And we were still feeling it. It was mad.
Honestly, it was mad. Do you remember when I was at Blues? When we won the League Cup with Birmingham City, right? And honestly, that was the worst thing that could happen to us. We won that League Cup final. And bearing in mind, that's late February or March or whatever it is, right? We must have gone on the most horrific run from that moment on. Emotional energy just zapped out of us, mate. Completely gone, right? Yeah. So I remember, anyway, just thinking back to that day, I remember, like I said, when we went into extra time, I said, we're buzzing our team. We've just scored a last minute equaliser out of nowhere. We've pulled it back, blah, blah, blah. And we're thinking, right, we look good here. Wolves look a bit tired.
Yeah.
The game kicks off into extra time. And I'm thinking, they look fucked, by the way. They look absolutely gone here. And we just knew at that moment that we were going to go on and win it. It was a mad game.
Yeah,
it was
more mentally, isn't it? You know, it's so mental, kind of in a game of that stature and kind of how the game went. And like I said, the penalty in the last minute absolutely just took knocked the stuffing off to us massively. Massively.
I'm gonna bring it up now before the comments on YouTube do. We can't talk about Wolves Watford without talking about Molyneux on the 10th of March 2022.
Is it 22? Jeez.
Yeah, so Wolves
weren't that long ago.
Wolves popped Watford 4-0.
Yeah.
You didn't have your finest ever game. And I think the thing that struck me is I've never seen you probably that low after a game.
Yeah.
And the other thing is Wolves are like, I'm a Wolves fan, kind of like, what's the word? Persistent with the chanting.
Vile.
I don't think I have ever seen a crowd chant about one player for 90 minutes straight.
Yeah.
Did you notice? You give them a bit.
It's because I was at West Brom because I played for West Brom for 8 years. Yeah. So I did give them a little
you
bit.
You did
to
put
be
a
fair.
Little tweet out. We'll put it on the screen
it was
now.
After the FA Cup semi final, I put something like, always nice to beat the Wolves. And because when I was at West Brom, we beat Wolves 5-1 once. Yeah. Okay. Mick McCarthy was manager. He got sacked literally after that game. We battered him. It was at Molyneux. And so when I spelt the Wolves, I did the WO. And then the one was the Al. And then the S at the end was
five.
The five. So the Wolves fans knew what I was coming for.
Don't forget it,
They didn't forget it. It was brutal, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, yeah. It was.
Do you notice that in the game?
I noticed it with him because they were on him every time he got the ball. To be fair, whenever I played against you, it's been that way. Do you know what I mean? Whenever I played against you, it's been that way. But I think, kind of going back to kind of playing there, you were the only one really who it stuck with.
Yeah,
so I'll be honest, because there is some players it happens to and then it disappears after a couple of games.
Yeah, no,
but with you, it was constant.
I think you're up there with Wolves' most hated.
It was constant.
Yeah, for sure. Do you know, honestly, like, I'll hold my hands up on this as well. That genuinely affected me that day.
Did it?
You know when fans say, like, do fans
You've shocked
matter?
Me there, you know.
Yeah,
mate,
genuinely,
yeah,
mate. Yeah. You know, when they say, will fans get in your head? Can they affect the outcome of anything like that?
Yeah.
That day, genuinely, they got in my head and they affected my performance.
What I will say is, though, I think it's probably harder, the hardest part for a keeper. I think if it was to happen to an outfielder,
for sure,
I think it's a little bit different. Do you know what I mean? I think with the keeper, because you're on your own.
Mate, you just
you know
there.
What I mean? You're on your own.
I'm like, just looking around.
And
right
like
now.
I said, like every time the ball comes back to you, you're hearing noises and you're hearing chants and you're hearing things. So I think for a keeper, I think it's the hardest thing in the world. I think if it was to happen to me, it'd be a lot different.
You can
I mean?
Almost,
but
like,
it wouldn't happen
it
to me because I'm not as petty as that.
It's true, mate. It's true. I learned a lesson though. I ain't gonna do nothing like that again. Oh mate.
So when you're like in the goal, are you purposely standing further away from the?
No,
the stand,
you can. You've got to just do what you can do. But like literally every time that... So what would happen is the fans were always on me like crazy. So as soon as my team played the ball back to me, bear in mind, we were getting pumped. We got beat 4-0. We were 3-0 down at halftime. Yeah. Our lads had gone, by the way. We were well on the way to relegation that season, So spirit was low, confidence were low. Lads were just struggling in general. So anytime the lads played the ball back to me, which they're so happy to do because none of them wanted to make it.
Yeah.
None of them wanted to be brave 100%. And like try and do a bit. They just happy to turn around, Fozzie, deal with it, please. So they were giving me all sorts back, passing it back to me. And then the Wolves lads, the front lads, it was Jimenez actually at the time as well. They locked onto it so quickly. They were like, well, he's shitting himself, so let's just shut him down, right? So they were shutting me down like animals, and I'm fucking shanking stuff there.
It was
one of the goals,
so windy as well. Yeah.
One of the goals, I shanked the life out of it, and Podence just like put it straight in the back of the net. I'm thinking, oh, just dig. Yeah. Like if a hole was to open up right now, but it's the way it goes.
Do you know what,
Fozzie? I'll never change it.
Over time, there are sections of the Wolves fans that have forgiven you. And I'll tell you why. Because one of the most often seen comments in our videos is, Fozzie, I'm a Wolves fan. I always thought you were a prick. But you're actually all right.
Yeah.
And you go, you take that one
every day of the week. This podcast has really helped you, mate.
I know. I've won them back round, mate. Absolutely buzzing, yeah. Right, let's talk about a few of your managers that you played for. By the way, thank you again. This is world class, honestly,
yeah,
Connor. You are so, so good. Some of the managers you played for then. So I'm going to start off with Brendan Rodgers, one of your first proper managers.
Yeah. He was my first proper one, if I'm being honest. The first time kind of I started to understand football really from a tactical point of view. Kind of you grow up and you play football and you learn to play football Liverpool way and all this, but then all of a sudden you go and play man's football, and kind of what he was like tactically was brilliant. I think it's shown kind of with Liverpool. He was so close to winning the league and different things, and what he'd done kind of with the front three of Suarez, Sterling, Sturridge at the time and all this sort of thing. But he was the first manager really who I looked at and went, tactical wise, this is different level. This is totally different to kind of what I've grown up doing. And he was the first one where I really looked at it like that, because, like I said, on the grass, and he coached everything, he'd done everything. And that was something that I really learned from him,
Nigel Clough.
Yeah, class. Loved him.
Tell us a bit about Cloughy, because he's got like a bit of, I don't know, there's a mystery. Is that the word about Nigel Clough?
I think it's mystery, legacy. Is he a bit of chip off the old block with his dad? And
yeah, I don't necessarily... He's very... He'd probably say the same as well. He's a very old school manager, but I loved it. I loved it. He came in at Chef U. We were struggling the first half of the season under David Weir. And Nigel Clough came in halfway through the season and I wasn't really playing that much. I was in and out of the team and different things. I was on loan and blah, blah, blah. And he came in. I remember one of the first conversations he had to me, like looking where we are now, kind of playing with Leicester and the manager now. One of the first conversations he had with me was, you don't go near the ball. I went, what? He went, don't worry about going and getting the ball. So I was like... Right, okay, so what do I do? He went, just run. So I went, right, so at this point, being a man, I'm playing as a number 8. So we play 3 in midfield, playing like in a box-to-box.
Yeah, yeah.
So he said, just run. So I was like, right, okay. He said, whenever that ball goes well, if you're not in the box, you don't play. So I'm like, right, so every
ham and
time...
Egger. You're a ham and egger.
Literally, I was running from box to box.
That's
back
a Tony Pulis as
well. What's a ham and egger?
Just run, basically, yeah. Just work.
So basically, mate, I think I scored 7 or 8 goals when he came in, second half of the season. It was mental. But I just kept on getting the end of balls that were coming in the box, mate, and just scoring. It was weird, but he was so, like... And this was another one in training, so he would literally every day, we'd do 5-0s every day, and it was so enjoyable. He would join in every now and again. It'd be great, no problem. And he must have been doing his UEFA A or his pro license or whatever. So this one day we goes out to train and the assessor's there. So as the assessor's there, he's setting up a drill. He's setting up a passing drill. Next minute, he's telling us to receive on the half turn. I felt like going to him after training, going, you do realise you told me never to go near the ball. So why am I receiving on the half turn? But honestly, absolutely loved him. I think kind of what he'd done for me, kind of improved me as a footballer, but as a person. I think kind of understanding, it was old school, but I loved everything about it. Brilliant. I seen him the other day when our boys played Burton. I went to the game at Burton Albion. He was commentating. And it was so good to see him and just have a chat with him.
That's such a good thing about football, isn't it? Like, I guess when you get into your mid-20s and you've had a couple of clubs, two or three clubs, is it's just getting that experience of learning under different managers. And I guess it does shape you as a person. Sure.
You learn so much though, don't you? Yeah. Do you know what I mean? I feel like you learn so much. And it's so good. I think it's so good that like so many footballers, I love football. I'm obsessed with football. And there's so many people who think of football in different ways. And you learn so much. Yeah, it's so good, man. Honestly, like I said, going back to Nigel Clough and where we're at now, it's like it's chalk and cheese. It's one end of the spectrum to another. Do you know what I mean? But both sides work.
Yeah.
Both ways
and
work.
And you'll have learned equally.
No right way. That's what I'm saying. There's absolutely. No right. Both ways work in their own ways. And it's brilliant. I love it. Yeah.
I'm 40 years old. Honestly, I'm the same. I still learn. Yeah. Every day I'm learning shit. Yeah. Something happens in a game or in the change rooms or this and that and how to deal with it or how you could deal with it. A better way to do something.
I also think what you won't realise is that people are probably learning off you as well. Do you know what I mean? People, like the young boys, will be learning so much off you. Do you know what I mean?
You try and do it professionally and you want to set an example at least or just do it the right way. So even if they follow we're 80-90% of the way, you think hey, you've got a chance at this.
Yeah,
100%,
mate,
And then Paul Lambert as well. We spoke about Nuno. I'm buzzing off Nuno, by the way. Yeah. I've got obviously a goalkeeper. He's going to be like that, isn't he? But talk to me about Paul Lambert then as well.
Yeah, again, very similar to Nigel Clough. He kind of come in and just simplified everything. And we were struggling at the time, really struggling when he first came in. And we were fighting relegation in the champ. And we were poor side, really. And like I said, he came in and just completely simplified everything. We had Dave Edwards, who was when you talk about, what was it, Hammenegger? Yeah. He was a Hammenegger. Do you know what I mean? He would run the channels and literally we'd put it into midfield and I was playing right back and I'd be flipping it down channels and be running, we're getting bodies in the box. Yeah, crashing the box and all this sort of stuff. But he was good off the pitch as well, kind of. A little bit of banter with the boys and we used to do you probably heard of it, but worst player on the Friday before would have to wear the shirt.
Yeah.
So on the shirt, it'd say, "I'm shit" on the shirt and on the back and all that. So you'd have to wear the shirt and the other team would have to kind of pick who was the worst player on the other team and blah, blah, blah. So he brought in these little things for kind of a little bit of spirit and it helps us. Because I think we ended up going finishing 14th, 13th, whatever it might have been. And he really helps us just kind of simplify everything and kind of just settle the ship a little bit.
What do you think after football? Manager, pundit?
I'll be honest, I'm on my UE3A now, so I'm doing my A. And before I started doing my badges, I loved the pundit work. And I do love the pundit work. It's something I really enjoy doing. Like, I enjoy kind of... I could speak about... I could sit here with you all day and speak about footy. I don't mind it at all, mate.
You could do any of it.
I could speak about it all day. So I love it. But I think kind of doing my B and kind of onto my A now, I'm really, really enjoying it.
Yeah.
Really enjoying it. I love being on the grass and kind of setting up sessions and planning sessions. Like I'll sit there, Mrs. will be watching whatever she's watching and all. I'll just sit on the laptop and just plan all my
stuff. Really,
yeah. Just have a little, I just think it's good. Do you know what I mean? I was quite liking, especially now I've been lucky to learn off so many managers and this manager I'm working under now is like, he's got so many ideas and I'm going home just kind of trying to remember everything that he's doing in the day because I think how he's coming across is brilliant. Yeah. So I've not really made a mind up yet, if I'm being honest. I'm not really going, I want to do this or I'm desperate to do that. I love them both, but I'm really enjoying the 8 at the minute. Yeah.
He's going to be a manager. I promise you, 100% he's going to be a manager. You can tell. It's obvious, honestly, mate. Yeah. It's obvious. I reckon anybody listening to this right now will agree with me as well. I swear on my life, that is what you want to do. You can just see it.
No,
mate.
I do
Your eyes light up
mate,
as soon as you start talking about that.
I do enjoy it.
I can't believe it. Like, it's not in me whatsoever. Yeah, I couldn't think of anything worse. But when you talk about it, eyes light up and you just buzzing. It's so nice, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
So nice.
I want to have a bit of England chat.
Okay, go on.
So you have won 10 England caps, part of the Euro squad. One thing we always like to ask is when you first got that phone call for your first call up to the squad, where were you? Who did you ring?
Yeah.
Tell us what you were feeling.
Oh, I remember it like it was yesterday. Honestly, it was what a day it was. So it was literally, I'll be honest, before I started getting picked for England, I used to be quite naive, really, because obviously you get a text, don't you, when you're in the squad and different things, or if it's your first one, you get a phone call. And I never used to know that. So I used to watch Sky Sports News. I look at the squad, I swear to God.
So you were disappointed.
This is no word of a lie. No word of a lie. Honestly, I knew in the back of my head, like, I've obviously not been picked because I played for England growing up and it used to be the same. You get texts and whatever. So I knew in the back of my head, but I'd still watch Sky Sports News just in case there was like a little, do you know what I mean? Like a bit mad. So I was desperate to do it, blah, blah, blah. I was playing well in the Prem. And then a squad had actually gone out and one of the players dropped out. And I was actually at home in the old house I was living in. And I was taking my boys over to his mates. So his mates lived on the other side of like where we lived, literally about 5 minute walk. So as I was walking over with my two boys. As I'm walking over, my little man fell over, right? This is the honest truth. So he's crying his eyes out. You know he's a dad and you're panicking. You're thinking, oh my God, like he's crying his eyes out. And I can feel my phone going in my pocket. So I'm thinking, oh God, leave it a minute. So took my little man back home because he was literally 2 minutes from the house and just said to me, missus, listen, tight, he had a cut on his knee or whatever. So I looked at my phone and I had a text message. Hi, Con, it's Gareth Southgate. Can you give me a call back? God. So next minute, I'm like this looking at my phone. You know, shaking like. So I've said to Amy, miss, I've gone, Amy Gow Southgate texted me there. She went, what? No, go and ring him. So I was like, yeah, sorry. So I went just for a little walk on my own, rang him. I said, hey, you okay? Blah, blah, blah. Dead nervous, sweating, all kinds. Had a chat, been on holiday, been anywhere, blah, blah, blah. Because it was that mad season. We just got to a European quarter final, Europa League, got knocked out. So we only had like a week off. And then all the lads had been back in. So I'd been to, it was COVID year, so we could only go, you know, the green places and that. So I went to Croatia for a few days, Dubrovnik, lovely, come back. So I said, yeah, been away, blah, blah, blah. Listen, we'd love to invite you in. So I'm like, oh my God, this is just surreal. So I'm on the phone going, I'm like, thank you so much. Like, I can't wait. I can't believe I'm getting this phone call, blah, blah, blah. And he was just saying, I can't wait to wait. We have obviously followed you for a long time. We're going to have a little goal playing three at the back. We'll see you on Monday. Sort out the car and that. MLB in touch and blah, blah, blah. So I literally went back to Amy. She gave me a big hug and all that. And, oh my God, I'm so proud. This, that, and the other. I ran my mum and dad. And as I was on FaceTime to my mum and dad, they had like my arm around my missus. And my mum and dad were like, what's up? So they thought I was going to tell them she was pregnant or something again. So she went, my mum went, you're not pregnant again, are you? So I went, no, it's something else. So I told her, and I just burst out crying. And it was just a special feeling, do you know what I mean? It was a special moment. And something, like I said, it felt like it was yesterday, to be fair.
What was that first training session like with the lads?
Hard.
Can you see, there's a level. Can you see it that clearly?
Oh, I think it's huge. And that's nothing against kind of any clubs I've played before. Yeah. It's nothing against that. I just think kind of everybody's so eager to impress there. And you've got to be... On it, mate. Like, and I'm talking like, if you misplace a pass, you look out of place.
Do you know what I mean?
And you do a one touch game there. Like day before a game, they do a game called one touch. So it's like the length of two boxes. Do you know what I mean? And everything's one touch, but it's 11v11. So imagine all the players in
there. One touch is the hardest game to do if you're playing a game, by the way.
And it's everything's one touch, and it's like pinball. Do you know what I mean? And it's the hardest thing ever. And I just think because everyone's so keen to impress, I think the level just goes up and everyone's bang on it. Yeah.
I remember when I used to go over with England, and again, no disrespect to anybody that I've ever played for, but I would come away from England thinking, Jesus, I feel so sharp.
Yeah, it was unbelievable, wasn't it?
So sharp, because the finish and the level was just so high, so top, that you learn to, you have to get extra little steps in, extra little contacts before you dive and push off and all that kind of stuff. So even I'd do that and I'd go back to my club and I'm thinking, this is a doddle.
We played this game there, and the coaching there, and how Steve and the manager there go about what they do is fantastic. And everything that's kind of happened over the last few years, I don't think is any coincidence. I think the way they train and the camaraderie that they build it, the feeling of going there is unbelievable, honestly. I can't speak more highly of it, because the lads, the coaching staff, the footballing staff, everybody about it is so in it, mate. But we do this game there, which is like, so again, it's like the two of the boxes. So three defenders, I've got to play against three attackers, and you can't leave your half. And then in the other half, it's three defenders, three attackers. So you can imagine us playing against the three attackers, 3v3. Do you know what I mean? So you're man-to-man, and like you're defending Foden, Kane, Sterling, Rashford, Mount.
Rapid little shit, Sancho
when he's there. And it's just, it's constant and it's relentless. And you've got to move your feet. You know them finishes that they add to the keepers when it goes through people's legs.
Yeah.
So you're trying to keep your legs shut, then they're bending it round you. Then you open your legs and you put it through. And it's just, it's relentless.
They're putting it through legs on purpose now, by the way. Do you know
100%,
that?
It's 100%, mad, isn't
it? They are. They're doing it on purpose now. They're aiming for your legs. They know you're going to open them.
Yeah. Kane's the best at it, isn't he? Kane's the best at it. Just finding your legs and putting it through. And keepers can't save it. It's so hard.
Give me one player that surprised you the most when you were away with England. Because obviously you come up against these players week in, week out in the Premier League. You get to see them. But when I always think seeing them in training is different to seeing them in a match. You get to get a bigger picture of everything.
Yeah.
Which one player would have made you go, poof?
Right at the start, when he first started coming in, it's not going to be a surprise now because of what he's doing. But I think I was there for his first session with England. Jude Bellingham's first session with England when he was, what were you, being 18?
Yeah.
Was one of the best I've ever seen in my life. He megged me, mate, right? We were playing this little goal game. And you know where you drag the ball round and he flicked it through my legs. So I'm defending the goal, like trying to keep my legs closed, like trying to do the old cricket one. You know the old cricket? And he's turned the ball round on his foot and put it through my legs and scored. And everyone gave him a clap, and I'm thinking, like, I look like a right plant pot here. Do you know what I mean? And he put it through my legs. And, like, obviously, it's not a surprise now to see what he's doing, because what a footballer. But his first session for an 18-year-old kid coming into the England senior team to do what he'd done was just...
He's phenomenal.
Was something I've never seen before.
You see his debut for Real?
Yeah. It's unbelievable, mate.
He looks like a big man, doesn't he? He looks like an already established fully grown, big man. Yeah.
But he is though, isn't he? He's a baby, do you know what I mean? I mean, I don't mean that to sound bad in any way, but he's so, so young.
I know.
To be doing what he's doing. And like, we've seen him at the World Cup. Like, he was the best player at the World Cup.
Ain't no thing, is
it? The best player at the World Cup. And like, another one at the World Cup, a little one where day before a game, we do like work on the starting team and we're obviously on the other team. And as we're on the other team, Steve Holland was kind of saying about passing lanes, how to get out from a full press and all these sorts of things. Jude got the ball. And as he got the ball, he passed about five of us and ran it over the halfway line. And everyone just stopped and looked. And Steve went, "Or you can just give it to Jude and he can just run out with it."
Like, wow. But we're
talking about like fully fledged Premier League players who was just walking past to get over the halfway line. All they had to do was get over the halfway because it was just about getting out from, I thought, do you know what I mean, playing out from the back. And he literally just got the ball, walked past about five of us and walked over the line. We've all just stopped. And he just went, "Yeah, or he can just..."
Not fully fledged. We're talking the best defenders.
You know the best of the best.
Best English defenders.
Mate, honestly, it was mad. Honestly, what a player.
I've got to ask you one thing, which you hear like in that... Over the years, I think England have had that transition from being a little bit detached from the public to maybe the last, under Southgate, is the nation loving them again and loving. And even though we haven't quite got over the line, I think people just accept it now because the team, there's so much togetherness. There are a couple of players, yourself included, that everyone just says, "You're just amazing to have around the place." Jordan Henderson's another. And you go, but even as a fan, I get a little bit annoyed going, that feels a little bit disrespectful because this is the elite, right?
Mm.
And England ain't carrying any passengers. Yeah. Is that something that's crossed your mind?
Yeah, not necessarily crossed my mind because we're footballers and you learn to have thick skin, don't you? I mean, we've talked about it before. So in terms of crossed my mind, it's something where I hear a lot of kind of... The first press conference we had when we was at the World Cup, one of the interviewers or the journalists who were in the thing said something about me being... an international tourist or something. Oh, right, wow. I swear to God. So I'm sat kind of on the press conference thing and I looked at like the press officer who I get on really well with. And I looked and I was a bit like, that's a bit of an heavy question, that, innit? Like, that's a bit mad. So I just said to him, I said, "Listen, I don't look at myself as a tourist, blah, blah, blah." And I don't. And it's kind of, people give me a bit of stick about, I go and I don't play or whatever it is. And I just said, I don't care. I said, I'm going with England to give the best of what I've got.
Yeah,
if they turn to me and say they need me at any point, they know they can turn to me and say, because I make sure I train at 100% every single day to push whoever's playing. If I'm going to play, no problem, let's go and crack on, let's play. If somebody else is going to play, then we push it as hard as we can. A story about, you mentioned Hendo there. When we was at the Euros, the first game we played Croatia. And you know what it's like the day after a game, we've been about it before, when players who don't play have got to train the next day. And sometimes it might be hard for some players. I don't find it too hard because I'm giving the best of myself for myself, but more importantly for the team that I'm part of. And Hendo pulled everybody at the end of training. So the training was really good, to be fair. Like, lads were bang on it. And Hendo kind of pulled everybody at the end. He said, "Gaff, can I just have a word with the boys?" The Gaff went, "Yeah, of course." And I remember this for the rest of my life, no matter what I go on to do after football. And he said, "Lad, no matter what, that's how you train. This is Hendo. This is the player." And he never played in the Croatia again. He said, "That is how we've got to train." He said, "We're going to do anything in this tournament." He said, "We train like that." He said, "Because you people in the circle are more important than the lads who play." He said, "Because you've got to push them because you're going to be needed at some point. And if you're needed, you've got to be ready. If you toss off training now, you're going to be knackered if you come to play." Do you know what I mean? And it'll stick with me forever, that, because that was so kind of important for younger players. Because in that time, we had Sancho, I think, was training. Mm. Chile was training. There was a few players training. Ben White might have been training. Young players who were kind of looking at him going, "God, that's got to be the level, that." Do you know what I mean? I can't sack it off at any point. And that kind of stuck with me. And I've always been a player like that anyway. But I've never thought of it as if, like, going for a holiday. I've never once thought of that, because it's about pushing the people as far as I can.
You don't see that. Honestly, you don't even think about it. Like, it is so important, though, isn't it? We know.
Yeah,
we
know, 100%.
But from the outside, they don't think that. They just think, "Oh, it's a little training session, let them just get through it." No, you are on it. You have to be on it. When you're away with things, you have to be 110% all the time. Mm. And to have a leader, someone like even a James Milner, someone like that, that it's not, like you say, tourists or whatever, but you know that they're going to be reliable and they're going to be every single training session reliable as well. Yeah. We could be in the 70th minute to bring you on to defend a 2-1 lead.
Yeah, yeah.
Reliable, please. That's what
I
want.
Absolutely. Look, James Milner, it's football cliches, isn't it? Mm. And everyone goes, James Milner, about his running. Oh, every pre-season he's the biggest runner. Right? He's played in the Premier League for about 20 seasons, right? Yeah. You do not do that unless you are a world-class footballer.
22.
Do you know who's brilliant for that? I know you've had him on, I think, his Trips. So Trips, for example... Let's be honest, let's look at the right backs with England. Like,
wow.
It's next level, isn't it? Like, it's unbelievable. But when Trips plays, no matter what, he does what he needs to do to push everybody.
Yeah.
And then when he doesn't play, he's driving everybody else on. That's what's so good about the group, is that no matter who plays, you've got other people waiting to come in going, "Right, I'm driving you, but when I come in, I'll make sure I do a job for you if there's a problem." Do you know what I mean? And he's one of the other examples where you go, first and foremost top player, but what a person to have to kind of pull people through and drive people through. It's massive, I think.
Oh, mate, it's incredible. Right, honestly, we're coming to the end. This has been fantastic, mate.
What do you expect from a Wolves?
I don't want to blow smoke you up, but this has been incredible. I just want to talk about a few of the toughest opponents you've come up against then. Premier League, you've got, 150 odd Premier League appearances.
Yeah,
right?
Something like that, yeah.
In your 150 Premier League appearances, you've come up against the big boys, Sergio Aguero, Harry Kane, Eden Hazard, Mo Salah, Mane. Who out of them lot, or it could be somebody else, who has given you the most torrid of times?
Harry Kane is the best of the best, I think.
Really?
Yeah, I think he's that good. I also think Haaland is right up there from last season. Incredible, incredible. But I'm going to go... Probably a little bit biased because I love Harry Kane, kind of him as a player, him as a person, how he does things. But as a player, I just think he's unbelievable, mate. Yeah. Unbelievable. I think he's that level. I think he's unbelievable. Kind of, he can do everything. He's a striker, but he's not a striker. Do you know what I mean? Because he can drop back into midfield. Yeah. He can defend.
He's so honest.
He's so clever what he does. He does everything right by the team. He talks. He communicates. He's a leader. I just think he does absolutely everything. And I've been lucky enough to play with him when I was a kid, and to see kind of how hard he worked when he was a kid to see him now, it's all in his favour, and it shows kind of what you can do if you work as hard as him, and what he's gone on to do is incredible. So I think Harry,
full package. How weird is it, by the way, seeing him walking into that Bayern Munich change
room?
You know what it's like,
watch all the videos.
Do you know what it's like when you walk in a new change room, right, and you're like, I hope the lads are having me, and also I hope they think I'm a good footballer, I guarantee you, even Harry Kane, he would have gone into that Bayern Munich dressing room, and his first training session, he will be thinking, I hope the lads think I'm a good player.
Yeah.
And this is 100%,
Harry Kane. Mate, 100%. True, 100%. But did you see the video of Tuchel with him? Have you seen the video of Tuchel? He's like a kid at Christmas, isn't he? Where is he? Where is he? Is he here finally? And I just thought that was like, that's just football, lad, innit? Do you know what I mean? Like a manager really wanting one of the best strikers in the world, and he's got him. And you see Harry walking him, he's going finally, and different things. But I completely agree with you. Yeah, you want to go to a new club and really think about we're talking about the best in the world.
I'd love nothing more for Harry Kane to win a Champions League at Bayern Munich.
Yeah, it'd be
because
nice,
it would just shut up the kind of naysayers that will give Spurs jip about not winning trophies, wouldn't it? Be great for it to see, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I want to see him back in the Prem. Give him 3 years out in Germany, rip it up, score 120 goals or whatever it is, and then
that's one thing I'm a little bit gutted about though, mate. That he's left the Prem. Do you know what I mean? Little bit gutted that he's left the Prem because he's so big for the league. Do you know what I mean? Like how good's our league? It's the best in it now. We've lost, for me, one of, if not the best. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm a bit gutted with that, but listen, for him, it's unbelievable.
The Cycling GK Fantasy Premier League team will never be the same, mate.
Exactly.
Have we got a sad day, seriously. He was an OG from day one, mate. Oh, always in there.
We've got a few quick fires,
yeah? Come on, round for a few
quick
fires. Yeah, sweet as a nut. Right then, so Connor Cody, quick fire questions. Best player you've ever played with? Oh, not England.
Not England. Okay, not England. I'm going to go, because I played with him for so long, I'm going to go Ruben Neves.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, what a player.
It's got to be, isn't
what
it?
What a player. Yeah. That one. I've got one for you. I like this one. You're in a quiz and you get to pick one player that you've played with in your whole career on a general knowledge quiz. Who are you going for?
Oh, like a clever. So someone who's clever. Do you know where I'm going to go? I'm with him now, James Justin.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Smart guy.
Smart one.
Comes across as smart. I hope he is. He comes across as smart. That he's the first one that comes to my head. James Justin.
He's smart or a blagger.
Yeah.
And then who do you not want on your team?
Who do not want on? Oh God, there could have been a few in this category, by the way. Who do not want on my team? I'd go Matt Doherty.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah.
Even though anything sport, if it was a sport quiz,
oh, we got a sports round.
I'd go Doc every day of the week. Any sport,
anything else,
any sport, anything else, I'd bin Doc.
The most challenging player you've played against? The most challenging player.
Yeah, I played in the FA Cup years ago. I played against Eden Hazard when he played for Chelsea. I was at Wolves and I played right back.
In his pomp.
He was on it, mate.
You don't want him.
He was on it. And I was right back.
You don't want him.
Yeah, I had
right
a
back.
Real, a real, player, real man. Tough night. Oh, no, tough no, night, no, yeah. No. Eden Hazard.
Favourite movie?
Ooh, I love Shawshank Redemption.
Ah, classic.
Yeah, nice.
Belter.
What about your biggest fear?
Oh, biggest fear.
Wow, this can get deep, this one.
Yeah,
guys.
It can,
like
yeah.
Rejection or something.
Biggest fear, yeah. I'm not massive on planes. I don't like planes too much.
Flying.
Yeah, like, I get like sweaty pants. I don't like planes too much.
So Ellis Genge shit us up, didn't he? Yeah. He said the ocean.
I don't. Ooh,
yeah. That planted a seed. It planted a seed being now left out
in the
ocean.
It scared us a lot.
Yeah, yeah. I wouldn't like that. Like, don't get me wrong. But yeah, I'm not great on planes.
So when you're flying to an away game, it's like, oh my God, I'm flying. Honestly.
I'd rather get the train or drive.
Train's brilliant.
Train's
top level. Train's top level. But I drive over flying.
But you have to get on the plane though.
You have to get on the plane, and they're like little planes as well, aren't they? And like they bounce through the air, mate. They're not like smooth either. They like struggle.
What is your sports bucket list? E.g., sort of like the Masters or Augusta. It could be watching a baseball match or
Wimbledon. I'd love to go to Wimbledon. Yeah,
have you done
especially
it
like never. Either. I'd love to go and do Wimbledon. Yeah, I like tennis.
Mate, honestly, that's about it. That's all we've got for you. We've taken too much of your time
already. No, don't be daft, mate.
I think we could have gone on for absolutely ages. Oh, yeah. So
thank
good.
You so much. Yeah, no, don't be daft anytime. Thanks for having me, fellas.
We appreciate it so much. As always, mate, up the Fozcast.
Up the Fozcast.
Oh, yeah, go on.
Cheers, mate. Cheers, pal. Cheers.
Brilliant.